This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 844, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 844. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Useless. Useless.
Joining us this week in the third chair, Dr. Ryan Haupt.
Hey, y'all.
And we are
Can anybody identify the quote of what I said? Connor, do you know what that is?
I do know.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think of what it is. I know what it is.
Oh, okay.
But you can't ask me these things at early in the morning.
I'm just I figured you'd at least find it familiar, and I'm happy
because
I'm guessing it's a low percentage reference, but also one I love. Stick around at the end of the show, and maybe I'll tell you who said "useless, useless" as his dying words.
Oh man! Oh,
1865.
There is actually a I read an interesting article by David Simon. Remember, he was developing the show on Lincoln?
Yes.
And he made a very compelling argument that it wasn't what he said, that it was what the soldiers told people he said for propaganda reasons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Are we allowed to talk about that before you give him the spoiler warning? Do we need to give the spoiler warning first?
Yeah, John Wilkes Booth said useless, useless in the what's the word for when a thing is in popular culture, but it's... Anyway, that's supposedly what he said right before he died. No,
yes. This is while Dr. Mudd was working on him.
This is after he ran away from Dr. Mudd's and smoke in Boston. Corbett apparently shot the bullet out of the burning barn. Who is into this, by the way? This is the earliest and deepest I have ever derailed a program.
Go ahead with the talk. Simon's argument that it was close to the name of his paramour, and he was reaching for his locket with her picture.
Possibly.
That's what he was really saying.
Yeah.
That sounds much more plausible than useless, useless. Anyway, where are we in the script? We are a fanboy, and everyone can read a bunch of comics. And one of us reads their stack of comics, and we call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books. Sometimes we've got a lot of books. Sometimes we've got fewer books. It depends on the week, really. The week leads the way. The week is the true producer. We'll talk about that.
That's deep.
Those books on the show. Sometimes we do listener mail. Sometimes we have to skip listener mail. And we apologize, and we always feel bad about it. And here's your spoiler warning. Exercise some caution. We might spoil the books. We might spoil who killed John Wilkes Booth, who killed Lincoln. All those things might be spoiled on the show. This week, Ryan, you had to pick.
I did have the pick, and the pick of the week this week was The Amazing Spider-Man, number 902. That's legacy numbering, folks. And the story is Zeb Wells, art by John Romita Jr., inks by Scott Hanna, colors by Marcio Menyes, and letters by Joe Caramagna, or Joey C., to put it in the parlance that has been used in the email thread up to this point. Yeah, we had I think we all had a lot of books this week. And of all the books I read, it came down to this was the one that I had the most fun with. It just felt like a really classic Spider-Man story. You know, it starts with the cliffhanger from last issue. The Vulture has dropped him from a great height after ripping his web shooters apart. So he's falling down into Central Park with no web shooters to stop his fall. And he has to figure out a way to not die, because Spider-Man, even though he's incredibly powerful, like, there's some fun limitations that you can have with the character, like just dropping him from really high. And he's been in communication with Norman Osborn, who is reformed and trying to do the right thing, and has even built him a sort of goblinized new spider suit. And because his suit and web shooters and all that stuff gets badly damaged by the Vulture, but the Vulture is still trying to kill him. And like, the Vulture is really mad because his granddaughter has rejected him because she's learned from Spider-Man the Vulture's true nature. And so Adrian Toomes is very upset about that and taking out his anger on Spider-Man instead of getting some therapy at BetterHelp.com. And
no free advertising this week, pal.
So Peter eventually is able to get his hands on the new suit from Norman. Now he's got like a spider glider. And so he's kind of like part Spider-Man, part Green Goblin. And he's using that, he's able to take down Vulture. And then he and Norman come to an agreement where Peter's going to go work for Oscorp. So I loved the cliff. You know, I love the sort of solving the problem of falling from a great height. I like a debut of a new suit that, you know, is not going to stick, because Spider-Man changes his suits pretty often. And I like the sort of relentless optimism that Peter shows and willing to give his own villains a second chance, even though it's probably not going to work out. Norman's going to turn on him somehow, but, you know.
And he's experienced that multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just won't stop reaching for the electrified cupcake. He can't.
But that's part of his heroism. And I really liked it. So that I just had a lot of fun reading this. I thought John Romita Jr. was the artist when I first started reading Amazing Spider-Man regularly, which was during Straczynski's run. So I, you know, he's one of my favorite Spider-Man artists. And this just, I thought, really sung on the page, looking at his art, and the story was just super propulsive, and I just really dug the hell out of it.
Josh, the electric thing that the creators can't stop reaching for is the glowy spider on the chest, which is back now.
Oh, I didn't even notice it, but it's okay, because this is not like the main, this is not the A suit. It's just,
I know, I'm just saying.
It makes sense.
Back. It's back. This was also my pick of the week, by the way, too.
It was also your pick of the week, really?
Yeah, I love this. I love this issue. What I really liked about it wasn't all the things you said were right. Like, how's he gonna get out of this cliffhanger was fun, and the Romita art was terrific. But I also really like the minor sort of head swerve they gave us, in which, you know, Peter calls up Norman for help, and Norman says, "I can't come help you. You know, good luck, sorry." And then he breaks the phone, smashes it, and I'm like, you think, oh God, it's Norman's back, right? He's still evil and unhinged. But what we find out later was he broke the phone because he's frustrated that he can't go help, because Sin Eater took away his sin, and he can't get back on the glider, because once he does, it'll all come back. Like, it's almost like
he's an addict,
right? So it was a reversal of what we thought was happening, which I thought was a nice little. I think Zeb Wells is terrific. He was one of the Brand New Day writing team, and I always liked his issues quite a bit. I think he's a very good Spider-Man writer, and I thought he's a very good comic writer, and I thought this whole issue
was
terrific.
He's been doing mostly the TV shows, like the animated Marvel shows, I think, for a while. I also really liked this a lot. I don't know about pick of the week, but I didn't really pick one. and I think that for me, this run is filling in the same way that the Dan Slott run filled in for Fantastic Four, and I was just like, oh, we're back. We're reading Amazing Spider-Man now.
Right.
There's not, like, all the drama in this is, there's obviously the danger of falling from great heights and then how he's going to figure that out. And
but it's got the right amount of soapiness.
Right. Well, but then the drama comes from the interpersonal relationships, which are all messed up because they're criminals and villains, but at the same time, incredibly intimate. You know, Norman Osborn and Peter Parker have such a, like, a long history together that's intertwined, and it's just so rich. Like, it's melodramatic. It's soapy, I guess, is certainly the way to do it. Same thing with the Vulture here. Like, there's a personal nature to it that is different mm-hmm. than I just want to smash you because Stiltman's in the road. You know, it's all little and personal. It's like a family book in a way. And also, you know, I've said this, you know, Romita fits on some things and not others, and as his style is changing over years, it doesn't work for some things. But here, I love the big panels. I love that, like, it's so straightforward, the comic book storytelling in it. Like, the faces fill the panels up, and he's not... It's almost like we've said with some people, like, oh, they really fill in the background and do whatever, and he's putting all of the characters, like, stage front. Like, that's where they are. We're seeing their faces. We see the action. The camera's in really close to everything. And it makes this feel... present. It makes it feel immediate, but also it makes it feel like it's of another time, because this isn't what comic book art looks like most of the time. And it's just I see there's a new Amazing Spider-Man, and then I say no, the Sin Eater part's over, and I go, oh, right, and then I start reading it and I enjoy it, and it's over so soon.
And I
mean that in a good way. I want more,
especially this issue. I thought, I'm looking at the art now, and the opening scene where he's falling is terrific. And then there was immediately afterwards, Vulture, grabs him at high speed and takes him up and then throws him into a brick chimney. And there's just, you can just feel the sort of the hit there, because mm-hmm. the way he's drawn it.
Yeah.
And I thought, God, he's really fucked up. Like, he's really fucking
crazy. Romita does a really good battle damaged Spider-Man.
Yeah. And
yeah.
You know, it's almost like this issue is almost like watching a side scroller video game, right? It was just like, it was mm-hmm. constantly moving to the right. And,
yeah.
You know, there was no let up in this fight between Vulture and Peter. Even when Peter, you know, runs off to get a new suit and shows up on his little spider glider and he's got his glowy spider chest thing going on, it was still very, it kept moving. And, you know, this is a terrific issue. It was like, this is a comic book 101 stuff.
Do you know what else I've liked that adds to this is that I've been seeing reels of John Romita pop up on Instagram, and he's mm-hmm. sitting at his drawing table, and he just seems so goddamn cheery about working on comics. No, like, it translates. Like, I see him there, and I was like, I can see. He's like, well, we're off to draw again. You know, he's got a little bit of that old New York man thing. Yeah. But also, like, he seems as young and energetic and excited about it as ever. And, I mean, he could be putting on a Stan Lee-like show. But, you know, I don't know that he needs to do this anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he could just do covers and convention pieces, and he'd make as much or more money. He's still doing it because that's how his dad did it. That's how he did it.
I'm sure he made enough money to kick ass. You know, he doesn't need to do this anymore.
Yeah, and so when you're, you know, in your 60s, that's correct, right? You know,
he's in his
70s. he's a comic book. If he's 70, he looks amazing.
He works out a lot. I see his arms. He doesn't wear
sleeves. I know that, but. It's true. But either way, like, you know, whether it's true or not, I want to believe that I want to believe that he loves this. And yep. and I every indication is that he does. And that means a lot. That adds a lot to it. It's also very Spider-Man, if you think about it. You know, like, I just got to keep doing this thing because it's what I'm here to do. You know, and that's his job is to draw comic books. And that's what he does, you know, and he does it great.
I think if anyone does genuinely enjoy everything that goes into doing comics, it's got to be a Romita, right? I mean, what else has he known? You know, this
Nothing.
Is it. And if you're still 66 and you're still doing a monthly comic or mm-hmm. whatever this is it double biweekly? I don't even know, but you've got to like doing it, you know? And then he's still very, very, very good at it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm always happy when Amazing Spider-Man comes out. I loved Issue 900. I love 901, but this was terrific. I pick a week with time my weeks. Sometimes I don't, just in my head. But this was. I finished this. And I was like, oh, that's pick of the week. Despite the fact that they gave mm-hmm. him a suit that displays emojis on his face.
I also don't terrible, like it when Spider-Man's mask is a helmet. I don't think Spider-Man doesn't need a helmet. It's weird.
Well, it's the front chunk of it, like the Goblin. It's a Goblin costume.
Yeah.
I love his spider glider, by the way. It's so dumb, but it is so, I mean, again, that's
yeah,
how,
and he, like,
John
how he can
would've
how
done
he
it.
Can control it with his web shooter is just uh-huh. that's silly.
Very fun.
Peter has like Mount Olympus sized amount of forgiveness in him if he's teaming up with the guy who killed his girlfriend.
I like that it's never identified as such. We all just accepted the term spider glider because we're that, I mean, I think we're just that deep into the
spider glider.
Like, yeah, of course it'd be called a spider glider.
I don't even know if they said that, but I was like, when
I
was saying,
I don't think
like,
they did.
I was, when I was saying, I was like, well, this is right.
Right.
It's obvious.
There's no question that that's not what
it is.
What
Stan would have done.
Yeah.
So then next month we have Wolverine. So this is, or whatever this book comes out.
And that was another, like, that was another little, like, nice little tag at the end of it. I was like, oh, I'm legit, like, I don't know how Wolverine's going to enter the picture, but I'm legitimately excited to see what it is. Because it's the old brown and yellow costume.
Yeah, it's a good Wolverine
Well,
costume.
It's not the old one. It's his sort of new one that recalls the old one.
Recalls it enough to make me happy.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. It was good.
The
was
one
a
he
good
was wearing when I started reading comics in the 80s.
Right.
So this week we had Tales of the Human Target, number one, which was a placeholder because the Human Target book, which I think we all are agreement is one of the best books being put out, you know, went on like a 5-month hiatus while Greg Smallwood could catch up. And it's, anything that Greg Smallwood has to do to get the book done, I'm fine with waiting. But this was a little like, hey, you're waiting. Here's a little one shot featuring the art of Kevin Maguire, Michael Janin, Raphael Albuquerque, and some interstitial pages by Greg Smallwood, to which I say, let him draw the regular book. Don't make him draw these extra pages. And this was fine. You know, this was fine. It was a bunch of short stories in which three characters who are involved in the main story, Guy Gardner, Booster Gold, and Fire, encounter the Human Target in other cases. It was fine. It gives us a little bit of a look into their personalities, which might be useful for the main series. But otherwise, it was just sort of like it was whatever.
Yeah, I thought it was fun to read. I opened it and the first thing I did was like, how many pages is this? And I checked and it was like 45 pages. And I was like, okay, that's fine. It's a little long, but we'll get through it. And it was fun. I think Tom King has a Booster Gold that he does, which is a little above over the top that I kind of enjoy, but I can only take so much of it. And this was at the very end of how much I wanted to take, but at least he's got a take on him. I didn't know what the twist was going to be, what the reveal was here. I liked how each story had a different tone to it. I liked Guy's self-righteousness, but also that he wasn't wrong. He said, there was a line here, and I know that this isn't exactly true because it turned out not to be who we thought it was, but he's talking about this cult and how it attracts these people, you know, and its arrogance that he hates. And he said, that's what I saw. It was a fancy boy lecturing at everybody. He wasn't brainwashed by that cult. No, those people just freed him to be who he always was. And I was like, oh, that's... That's telling me a lot about America, and I thought that really stood out to me. I thought it was a great panel. Connor, you always have issues with modern coloring on Kevin Maguire.
Yeah, this is better.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. And then finally, I thought that the Raphael Albuquerque pages translated really nicely. Whatever the subtle adjustment he was to do sort of the mainstream superhero pages, like I could tell it was Albuquerque and I could not tell it was Albuquerque. And I thought he really did the job as
Albuquerque's art.
I would have had a hard time identifying this as Albuquerque if you hadn't told me.
Yeah.
His work has changed a lot. I don't know if it's because he switched from physical to digital, but it's lost something. It really used to have a personality and texture, and it's gotten more sparse.
This is
better than I've seen in a while.
Right.
I actually think of the three of them, the Fire story by Michael Janin was my favorite.
They all had a different tone, and hers had that. Hers almost felt most like a Tom King story. So it's kind of this is a bummer. But I didn't understand.
It was one of those things I didn't understand
until it was over. You know, and I think that this gave us a lot of context that you don't need for the other story. But as it is, you know, he's written it. It's like there was side preacher issues that you didn't need to read, but it made the other story stronger. This feels like that. If you're going to put something in the middle, you know, at least it was high quality, I think.
The most interesting thing about it was the final page, which was the Greg Smallwood drawn ice page, in which she's clearly talking to all three characters. And it's heavily implied that, you know, which is what we suspected, that she was basically a plant in the main book to go, you know, to suss out what he's doing and, you know, get on the inside. And which is also like classic detective noir thing where the good girl is not as good as you think. And so, I mean, this certainly wasn't bad. I just, you know, it was as expected. Each story for me was, you know, these clearly he's the human target is one of these characters for each one. And so it was fine. I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it. But I'm looking forward to more. And next month, Human Target comes back. So I'm excited for that.
Is it next month? That soon?
It says to be continued next month in the Human Target 07.
Well, there you go. Public domain number 3, which I always forget what it is. If you were to ask me 2 weeks after this issue comes out, hey, what comic is public domain? I would have no idea. So
you love the last issue so much.
I loved all of them. This is one of my favorite Image books right now. And I thought that this was the best of the issues so far. You learn a little more about the Sons, that you didn't know before, which brings context to so much of what has happened before. This had a page in here of there's the brother. So previously we had thought there's one brother who's like the forthright dude, the one who looks like,
Chip Zdarsky. Yeah.
And then there's the one who seems more like a fuck up, but now you learn that the one brother is actually a gambling addict and the other one, you know, he's a tattoo artist, but he's not really a fuck up. He just is a little looser with things than other. Anyway, there's a page in here where it's one page. It's a short story in itself in the comic book, where he put a different tattoo on the guy than the guy wanted. And then he gets
that's
fired.
Really funny,
and
it's
really funny. It's really well done. The tattoo is great.
I know. And it's like, such an improvement.
The tattoo was so dumb initially. But I also love the fact that like the guy who runs the place is like, why did you do that? He's like, it's better.
But then it cuts
to what they wanted.
It cuts to the girl getting the Asian script, you know, the kanji on her back, and he's just writing white person on her back. So he's doing it too.
He's not a good tattoo artist.
Well, the art's great, but, yeah, but no, he's bad at customer service. Yeah. His customer service is a big problem.
Yeah.
But I just like that page. Like that page on its own would have been my pick of the week for the. I was like, oh, it's a perfect page. The only issue I had in this is that they changed time. After that, and I got confused to who was who, because now the shitty brother, we cut to the past, and the shitty brother has just lost his job right after the other brother lost his job, and I was like, well, why is his hair a different color and he's in brown now? Why is everything brown, actually? And then we sort of understand later that this is the past. There's a little time jumping in here that doesn't quite work.
So we find out he owed money, he owed $10,000 to these gamblers, serious guys, and... $5,000, and then that's the past, and then later on, now he has $60,000, and so they're really gonna fuck him up.
Yeah,
is the lawyer that he ends up hiring? Is that the same? That's the same character from The Good Wife, right? The kind of quirky,
basically, yes, basically. So then he ends up his debt ends up causing his father to settle for $60,000 for the character, which is. Right.
That first part, that's kind of interesting, and it's backstory. But then as we get to the other half of it, then we move forward with the story that's been ongoing. And I really like the business thought that's going on here. I feel like this isn't like a full-on, this is like an interpretation. It's dramatized interpretation of how this would work. But also, if you're a comic creator, you think about this stuff. You're involved with these stories and these kind of people. The person who is like the publisher of quote unquote Marvel or whoever, she's got, you know, she's a complete badass in her office. And then they make this deal. I also like that the family, as fucked up as everybody is, like the dad is like such, the artist dad, such a good guy. You know, he's like, I'll pay you back, but I don't like bullies. And you're like, oh, man, he's going to Captain America, that bitch. And then they cut back to the future. Right. And so they feel like they got a score to settle with him. You know, the brother's not mad at the other brother. He's like, you have an addiction. What are you going to do? It's an illness. You know, I like when there's the world against the core family. You know, and sometimes it's good when the family fights the Fantastic Four model. But in this, like, they're good people trying to do the right thing, but there's pressure be set on them, and you know the end thing is like, I got the rights to the comics back, and anybody who knows anything about comics is like, no.
Well, first of all, he's thrilled. Look at his
thrilled.
Look at his face. But they would never give the rights to. I mean, that's the foundation of the whole thing. I mean, the comics run.
Well,
they would never do that. But I kind of wish. This is a very, very, very minor thought when I read this book, because I like it a lot. I kind of wish he had a colorist, because the coloring is kind of flat, sometimes distracting. I prefer flat coloring. I'm thinking more of the environments and the characters.
Yes, yeah, the backgrounds can be a little bland.
He's doing a thing though where each scene, like, I feel like it's more color theory going on.
It almost looks animated.
The technique of the coloring is basic, and I'm actually fine with that.
I love the character coloring. I just wish the background coloring was a little better.
Right, but like, so the first bit in the tattoo parlor, you know, it's all green and pink, and then
I think you're onto something, Josh.
It's brown and green. As we get into her office, it's pink and
purple,
pink. You know,
yeah
like each scene, it gives you a mood sort of about where they go out. They're outside, and it's all blue.
You're right.
He's doing themes here.
That's cool.
I don't know exactly what they mean, and I wish that they were used into slightly better effect in terms of time frame.
Well, Josh, it's these are the Infinity Stones.
Right.
So he's going to reveal.
I just, like this is one of those instances where he decided, I think, not to be like 5 years ago. And I think he should have. I think that would have fixed everything. Yeah. Now, 5 years ago, whatever. And then all of a sudden, you're good to go. Also, the brothers' haircuts are too similar. Somebody needs... Like, the dad has a ponytail, somebody needs some other shit, or blonde hair.
Well, I mean, are you saying you have trouble telling the brothers apart?
When they switch times. If you look from when the tattoo guy gets fired to the next page from that, the other brother, they have the exact same haircut, but the coloring's slightly different, and it was confusing.
Oh, I never have that trouble. Because one of them has black hair, one has brown hair, one's fat, one's skinny.
Yeah, but all the coloring changed. You went from this again. We went from that purple thing. I thought the light. I was like, did the lighting change, and that's why it looks that way.
No,
he has glasses on. I guess that's different.
They look really different to me. I don't have a problem.
Well, it's because of the time change, though. That's why. Doesn't matter. Could have used it a little better for me. Fantastic Four, number 691.
The final issue for Dan Slott. There's epic run.
I'm standing up and saluting. We didn't deserve it. It was delightful all the way through. I'm really going to miss it.
Yeah, and this was a classic epilogue issue.
Yep. Right?
So the story basically ended last month. This is, we get to wrap it all up and, you know, reset. This is perfect. Like, Dan Slott is the perfect guy to do an incredibly long run, you know, fuck up everybody's lives. And then at the end of the lives, he gets into the story. He gets to set everybody back on the board, which is what he's always done. You know, this issue is mostly about, you know, Johnny getting his life back. He's no longer constantly novaing. That's what we've been waiting for.
Well, I was going to say, I like that the problem wasn't that it was like difficult science, is Reed just didn't have time. So right. Now everything's been taken care of. All right, here you go. They'll help fix you. Give him some numbers. He's good to go. Like, they just reset it. They didn't leave it like that, which gives questions about what's happening in Amazing Spider-Man and how far in the future that is, but whatever.
You know, this is, you know, mostly rep. I don't know the point of this sister character. She was kind of annoying and didn't really like her, but she was mostly just an audience conduit into what was happening in the story itself. But I don't know that we needed
it. It's frustrating when a new character is brought in and all they have to say is like, no. Like, no, I don't agree. And it's like, well, I mean, I know comics aren't improv, but like, it helps if you yes and the characters who are trying to do cool things.
Yeah, she was annoying. But you know, the little molecule man bit was fun. Like, it was all the bits in here were fun. And you know,
you watch, she's gonna be a main character in the movie.
Ben Grimm choosing not to be turned back into human was good, a good character moment. I think this was a nice little epilogue to the story, and you know, however many issues it was a grand run, and you know, normally these things end and the writer or whoever gets a giant essay. Dan Slott just wrote a little paragraph in the back. That's it. Let's move on.
He's like,
I'm done. This was fun. See ya.
it was so fun. And let's give credit for introducing kids to a story and having it not suck. I mean, introducing a kid to the Oliver. Mm-hmm. I just realized what I just said. You know, the Brady Bunch Oliver, you know, edition or Chrissy, you know, to the every sitcom in our lives introduced a kid
around season 7 or 8.
Run.
Yeah,
and it just like it felt out of place and it was dumb. And they did it in this, and it works. Like, I don't want these kids to go away. I like Ben Grimm's little family. It's interesting, and it's funny. I'm guessing that the next, you know, maybe not necessarily the next run, but some point after that, somebody's going to lose the thread. and screw it up, or they'd be like, they're going to hit adolescence and then become violent or whatever it is. Yeah. It's going to be bad, but in this form as it exists right now, it's great.
Yeah. And I also really liked Johnny coming out of his flame state, not being mad or bitter, you know,
right.
He comes out and he's like immediately hugging everybody. He kisses Ben Grimm and, you know, he's excited to meet the sister. And it's like, he's like, not, there's no bitterness.
He's not running hot anymore.
Right. And his quote unquote soulmate, you know, her band falls off. They're no longer soulmates. And he's like, he's just like fine with everything. He's like, you know, he's just happy to be where he is.
But he's sad to lose her, but he knows it's the right thing. Yeah. That works.
It was the right thing. She was terrible. So this is a great run. This is one of the best Marvel runs in a long time. And I'm looking forward to what Dan Slott does next. I'm cautiously optimistic about the next run of Fantastic Four. We'll see. I'll give it a shot.
Do we know who's doing the next run?
We do, but not off the top of my head. They're not names you'd recognize. But I only know the Josh and I talked about it when they announced it, but it was.
But I don't remember.
Exactly. I did want to mention, speaking of ending runs, this is, we're one issue away from Deadly Class ending. This is Deadly Class 55 came out this week. And this is the second to last issue. It takes place in 2022. We're fully in the present. I believe I talked about last issue. Maybe it wasn't on the show. Maybe it was just with Josh. I don't remember. But it was clearly all about Rick Remender's angst about his TV show experience, where he did one season of Deadly Class on Sci-Fi. It's a terrific show. It was a really terrific show. And didn't work out. And that last issue was sort of exercising those demons. And this one, it's the pandemic. And Miguel, it's Miguel, right? That's the main guy's name? Miguel?
Yep.
Miguel and Maria, who are now married with kids and they're in their 40s, have, you know, he's got enough money from being a successful author and also briefly a TV show runner, that they are living on a resort in Hawaii.
It's weird. Where'd he come up with that stuff?
They're living in a Hawaiian resort.
Think of that?
With his family. And Miguel is completely depressed and cynical, and Maria's trying to get him out of it. It's sort of like, I feel like this is the angel and devil on Rick's shoulders that are constantly fighting, because
sure,
it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 page conversation with him and his wife about the state of the world and how awful everything is. And her comment is like, this is the best time to be alive. There's no one's ever had a better life than people who are alive right now. And you know, it's the constant argument we were especially having in the depths of the pandemic with each other. But
sure,
we pull out of that to find that Shabnab and the other white supremacist kids from the school have put a hit out on Miguel and Maria, and the next day they're going to get killed, and their families as well. And Saya, his ex-girlfriend, the Japanese Yakuza leader, finds out, and she sort of struggles with herself whether she's going to go rescue him, because she has some ill feelings towards getting dumped, and turns out to be moot because she gets murdered by the hitmen from Shabnab's. It's like everything's coming together. All these characters that we've been following for years are getting killed. And so the next issue is all about, will Miguel and Maria survive this hit squad that's going to show up to the island all by themselves, because there's no one left to save them. Everybody else is dead.
It's fair then to think that the author, who has put a lot of this, a lot of himself into this, and when I say a lot of himself into this, I mean it's him, he is concerned that it is all going to be taken away from him because of his past.
It's interesting. I sort of skimmed through the letters column, because this is the final letters column. And at one point, some kid wrote in asking about music, because he loved the music in the books. He's in college and he's sort of discovering, you know, old 80s punk. And he asked for some recommendations, and Rick just goes, I don't have the energy to give you recommendations. I just don't have the energy for anything anymore. And I was like, oh, fuck. And
jeez.
And but then, you know, he talks about also, he does a little wrap up on the letters column, because this is the last one. And he says, you know, this is the last of his books from that Image boom. You know, the one that Ron helped make when he went over there. Like,
right.
Rick had like four or five titles going at one point in the early part. He still has four or five titles going now, but this is the last one still being published. Right. You know, Black Science wrapped up, and you know, other books wrapped up, Tokyo Ghost, that stuff. But you know, we'll be at 56 issues, pretty much monthly, which is, you know, what, 5 years or so. This is clearly his baby. He made a TV show out of it. You know, and it's based, you know, a lot of it's based on personal stuff. So. It's going to be interesting. Josh, you may want to just jump in and check out the final issue of this, since you read it early in the run, just to see But it's clearly you can see a creator wrestling with his demons in this book, which is can be exhilarating but also concerning.
Not a new move for Remender.
No, not at all. That's what he does.
This episode is brought to you by iFanboy patrons and good folks. That's what we've talked about. Get over to patreon.com/iFanboy. You can directly support the shows. That helps unlock new shows. Some of the shows that we... I'm just going to say the word shows a lot.
Shows.
You can be a part of a great community. There's a Facebook group and a Discord group, and it's great. It's like that was the best part of the early days of iFanboy. You had this wonderful, amazing community, and with the internet being at as it was even then and now, it's such a rare, valuable thing. And I still think of all the sort of relationships and friendships that still exist. People who don't listen to the show anymore or part of it, but I'm always like, oh, they're part of the extended family, and that stuff still exists in those places. They're certainly treating me that way, and I appreciate that. The next stretch goal, we have that meeting. Yesterday I was like, I got to schedule this meeting with the guys. We got to talk about the thing.
We had a bunch of personal stuff happen that. it meant that this stuff kind of got backburnered, not because it's not important, just because it's not as important as some other things that are more pressing.
Yeah. Pressing is a good word. That's an excellent metaphor. Anyway, it's never been more important. If you were thinking of supporting this show for all sorts of reasons, if this is what you're going to do now, please do so. It is not. You don't need to. If you can, if you think it's the right thing to do, if you want to, please do. It is not required. But for the folks who do, know that we appreciate you very much. It makes a big difference in our lives, and it lets us be able to always keep doing this. My paying job. You can go to ifanboy.thrillist.com and buy a fuck ton of t-shirts, please. Go there, just buy all the t-shirts. Or the goods and the sundries. We've got 12 designs there that can be put on a bunch of different things.
One t-shirt,
yeah,
Josh would have less stress on his life.
Yeah, get a skateboard. I want to see a skateboard with Clint is dead on it. Mm-hmm. I was going to buy one, but that's not the option. You can go to ifanboy.com/support. There's a direct PayPal link. You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon where you can buy the books that we talk about in the books below. You'll see a link for the pick of the week. You'll see a link for the music that we use in the show all on the site. And that's just a general link that you can buy stuff there. There's bookshop.org. We partner with them to help out local bookstores if you need to get books from the internet. One really good way to do it is to use bookshop.org. And you can get you can either get it from the best books local books that they find, or you can choose which ones you want to. Those links will be on the website where appropriate. Let's move on to more comics.
I pre-ordered a book from Bookshop. I've never pre-ordered.
I just ordered 3 books from Bookshop.org this week. Yeah,
a professor of mine from college has a book of poetry coming out that I wanted to get.
You're never reading that.
We'll talk about it later.
Real question. Was it a poetry professor, or was it like one of your biology professors who does poetry?
You know what? It's actually relevant because she was the professor that taught the course on comic books. It was not just superheroes and funny animals. So that was where I read Mouse and Persepolis and Blankets and The Shadow of No Towers and a bunch of Same Difference in Other Stories, a bunch of really good indie comics that
I sometimes think that you got older and grew up, and then you talk about your first comics, and I feel like an ancient man.
A little part of that still turns to dust.
Yeah, that's fine.
College. Yeah,
I understand.
I was in college.
You say college, I say I was 30. Whichever.
Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, number 2. I read 1 and 2 together this week because 1 came out while I was on vacation, and I just kept putting it off, and I hadn't read it yet. I still have 2 books left from vacation I haven't read. I was reading this and I thought, why am I still reading this? Because this is like the 3rd volume that Gene Lun Yang's done with Shang-Chi.
And it's like episode 15.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not bad. Certainly not bad. This is actually issue 140 of Shang-Chi. But
is that on the cover?
Yeah. But this is enjoyable. This particular arc is enjoyable. It's just, it's not great, but it's also not bad. And I think I just really like Yin Lun Yang. I think he's legitimately one of the best comic creators at work. Uh-huh. But I just don't know that this is his strong spot.
I actually put this on here because I want to say, I think this was a really fun issue, much for the same reason that I think the Spider-Man was a really fun issue. It was like, he's got the rings and whatever, but his old girlfriend shows up. They go on a mission together. There's a twist. I was like, just straight up, like, this is what Shang-Chi should be.
This
there's
issue
kung
was,
fu,
was
there's
good.
Fighting.
Yes.
It was really, it was a fun, good old-fashioned, good old superheroes, gosh, comic. And I really enjoyed it. It was over, and I was like, oh, that was really fun. That's what it should, there wasn't a lot of navel-gazing and like, oh, my dad this or whatever. It was just my girlfriend shows up. She's a sexy MI5 agent. And it's our old partner here. There's like a guy with a sword claw hand. You know, it was a little dumb. It was a little 70s and really fun.
It did, yeah. 70s are very, very like James Bondy, right? Like it's you know, mountain lair and switcheroos and scuba diving, but then you have your clothes underneath your wetsuit. That's a very feel like James Bond thing.
There's panthers at the gate. He's like, there's still panthers here. That's great.
Yeah, guy loves panthers. With it.
My question is, did this sort of reveal that Shang-Chi was originally British, like from Hong Kong?
Feels because like it. That's what I came up with. I was like, I bet
because
he's from Hong
Kong. Because he was MI6. Fine. And I was like, I don't think they let Americans in MI6. So
no.
I wonder if the history of the comic character is running into the current Marvel Cinematic Universe version, because that one's clearly American and they're writing him this way, but the past seemed to indicate that he was originally British.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the British services, you know, would let you in. But whatever. Doesn't matter.
I am at the point as a comic book reader now where I like that. I was like, you know what? Fine. Make it make not sense. Like, let it be. I want to see how they work this out. Like, I want to see them try to have their cake and eat it too, and either have it work out or not work out. I just find it interesting now. Like, it doesn't bother me in the least.
According to the internet, he was born in the Henan province of China.
Well, that's not Hong Kong.
That's interesting.
I read a lot of DC versus vampires last week, as you may remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so this week I thought, well, maybe I should give this Task Force Z a try.
What is this? I don't even know what this book is.
This is Matt Rosenberg's Suicide Squad book.
Okay.
But the twist on it is that the villains are all dead and have been reanimated. So he's got like a reanimated Bane and... Yeah, Z, zombie, and Kurt Langstrom and whatever. And so I just read 11, like having not read any of them. And Jason Todd is in charge. I love doing this now. I think that to me, if you can just read a random issue of a comic book that's well done and it's still fun and makes sense to you, then they're doing a thing right. And they're doing a thing right. I went back, so I read 11 and it was fun. Eddie Barrows is an artist who I really like. You know, Matt Rosenberg has an amazing gift of dialogue and character and plot. Like, he's a great comic book creator, genuinely. And it was really fun. So I went back and I started reading it again. I've read issue one now, and I'll read the rest of them and catch up. But it's big and dumb, you know. It's a Jason Todd story. You know, I've never liked Suicide Squad, and I don't like zombies, so that's why I didn't read it. And I was like, I got to read what Matt Rosenberg writes.
Zombies?
He doesn't like.
No,
zombies.
I like. No, I don't like horror just in general, but like zombies, no.
He doesn't like zombies.
Wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
I liked Walking Dead despite the zombies, but when it was a TV show, it was a zombie TV show, and therefore I didn't like it.
Shaolin Cowboy, Cruel to Be Kin, #4, mostly by Jeff Darrow with colors by Dave Stewart and letters by Nate Picos. Have either of you ever read any Shaolin Cowboy?
Forever ago. I appreciate and know Jeff Darrow, but...
Didn't we read the first issue of this?
I don't know. I think I tried to and couldn't. Maybe. No, I never read it. Not this. I tried to. I saw it, and at some point I thought, oh, I want to catch up on this when there's a #1, but I missed it or something.
Shaolin Cowboy was one of those books that back when I worked in a comic shop and I just was devouring everything on the shelves, this book was still being published and coming out. So I've read all of the original ones. So when I saw there was a new series, I was like, oh, that's fun. I'll give it a try. And it's exactly what I remember. It's this crazy post-apocalyptic sort of Mad Max-y like environment, very deserty. But it's the Shaolin Cowboy, who's this ex-Shaolin monk who now just wanders the wastelands. And he's got a little pet Komodo dragon who's following him around. And the Komodo dragon's dad is trying to eat him. And that's the Cruel to Be Kin joke of it all. And he just goes around fighting weird monsters and stuff in the desert. And it's really straightforward, but the in terms of story, but the selling point is the art. I mean, the art is just crazy gorgeous if you're into the Jeff Darrow hyper-detailed, hyper-violent style of things, so...
I see. So issue one came in third for patron pick. I think I read it that week because it was like in the mix. And also, right. I haven't read Jeff Darrow in forever, so I think I read the issue and it didn't do anything for me, so I never read anything more.
It reminds me a little bit of the Anthony Bourdain book, that Get Hero, that he did a while ago.
Yeah.
But obviously, this predates that, but it's if you read that and enjoyed the sort of
are
zany...
Are these reprints?
No, this is a new story as far as I know.
Oh, okay, right, okay. But the property is old.
Yes, yeah. The property
Shell is Shell the Cowboy is an old property, yeah. It's yeah. Dark Horse, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So I just thought it was cool that there's a new series coming out. Just wanted to mention it for folks who maybe hadn't thought to check out a Shaolin Cowboy book before the end.
Or just if you've never checked out Jeff Darrow before, like you should do that. You need to know. Folks need to know.
He's crazy.
We haven't been to Star Wars Corner in a little while.
The last time Ryan was on the show, you did.
Yeah. Well,
but you weren't here, so it wasn't as much fun.
It doesn't count. I've been reading Darth Vader since the beginning. So this is Star Wars Darth Vader number 26. There was a volume or two before that. So we've been having a pretty regular Darth Vader book for a while. Mostly it was Kieran Gillen and then Charles Soule, and now it's Greg Pak. And this book's hilarious.
Now this is pod racing.
Yeah, I mean, it's so dumb that if you told me this is what it was on paper, I would be like, I'm not reading that. It's ridiculous.
And I feel
but
like
basically,
half the book was flashbacks to the prequels.
Yeah, it was. That was, which I was kind of like, that's brilliant. You didn't even have to write half the book. You just did scenes from the prequels. And here's the thing. Like the prequels are terrible movies. I don't care how old you're in the grade. Like, they're awful movies. But I am very intimately familiar with at least episode one, and so
we saw it 15 times in theaters.
Right, no, it's bad. Like I would have, but it tickles me. It delights me. It doesn't even matter that it's bad. Now it's taken years for me to come to grips with that. So here's the deal: Sabe, who was the body double for Padma,
Is that the Rose Byrne one?
Yeah,
whatever.
All right.
She shows up and he thinks it's Padme, but it isn't. And so she needs Vader to do something. And Vader, you know, like he's a badass, but he's kind of a little like, all right. Cause he looks like
Anakin at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anakin.
Yeah. But he's Vader in this. And they go to this, they go to this planet and it's all the people who were his friends when he was kids on Tatooine. So there's Kitster and there's a little Greedo kid. And there's a big storm, and the solution is that he has to, they need some, the only thing they can use is a giant pod racer. And they're like, but who's going to fly this pod racer? And Vader's like, so he takes off on it. Now, nobody knows that he's Anakin. It's the dumbest thing, and I love it. It is so stupid.
Sabe was the Keira Knightley one, so you can stop writing your emails. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right,
also,
Keira
if you
Knightley,
wrote your, it doesn't matter. It's not the point. It's ridiculous. I was like, it's in a sandstorm.
Yeah, and we know that Darth Vader hates sand.
And like,
it's got to be even worse when you're in the Vader outfit.
We flash back to a whole page of the scene from the movie where he's talking about how he hates sand. I was like, this doesn't need to be here. You guys are fucking with us. Yeah. I haven't seen that movie since 2002. I know about the sand.
Josh, question. If this was a TV show, would you enjoy it? Or is it because it's a comic that you're enjoying it?
It's comic.
Yeah.
It's absolutely because it's a comic. I wouldn't sit through if it was a TV show. But in this, like, I like, you know, we know comics. We talk about, I like watching them try to, because I think in this one, you can get away with being wackier. Like, look at this dumb comic shit. And you get, like, when they cut to the pod racer, it's ridiculous. You know, like a pod racer is like two engines that are towing like a little thing.
Yeah.
This is like two gigantic engines. Like they're comically large. And like he sits at a little thing at the top and the back of it. And it crashes it, of course. And yeah, it's fun. It's so dumb. I really had fun reading it. I've liked all the Darth Vader books.
Yeah, you have
like
I've dropped most of them.
And he's got his little cast of characters. Like you know, he's got Sabe. He's got Ochi of Bestoon, who I should be annoying, but I find kind of charming and delightful.
Agree.
I also tossed on Star Wars Hyperspace Stories by Amanda Diver and Lucas Maragon, and I only did this because this is a Dark Horse book, and how is this happening?
I wondered the same thing. I don't have an answer. I just saying right. I wondered it.
So it's a Clone Wars era story of a Wookiee diplomat and his daughter getting helped out by Obi-Wan and Anakin. Oh, wait,
were you asking about the rights?
Yeah.
So I think it's because it's a animated book, the rights are different. So like, Marvel has farmed out like all of the YA kids rights to other companies.
Because I knew IDW was doing some stuff.
Yes,
too,
I'm pretty sure because it's based in Clone Wars and it's considered part of a different rights package. So that's why.
It's a little flashback story to an adventure that Anakin and Obi-Wan and Padme had back in the day, and it's got some Wookiees, and I don't know. It definitely felt YA. You know, I just checked it out because I was curious what Dark Horse was doing with these books, and that's that.
So this wouldn't be canon then?
No.
Well, I think Clone Wars
is considered
canon. I know, but it's...
But it looks like this is going to be maybe an anthology style, so like the next issue is a different creative team. The next issue is Cecil Castellucci and Megan Huang.
Do you know that Diebert is German for the Bert?
Oh, that clears it up. Thank you, Josh. That's what I needed.
So those are the books we want to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, the patrons, by an overwhelming margin, it was like the most votes a book has gotten in a long time. The winner was Minor Threats, #1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Patton Oswalt and Jordan Blum, with art by Scott Hepburn and colors by Ian Herring and Nate Picos, again on letters. And this is a Batman DC pastiche that is, you know, not unusual in comics, just to do a version of the classic superheroes. And I think the overall plot of this story is the Joker kills Robin, all the heroes get pissed off, and all the minor villains at the end team up to go find the Joker and turn him in, because otherwise it's gonna get real bad for them because the heroes are pissed. That seems to be the overall plot of this book.
Well, I had a slightly different read on it, where it's when the Robin character gets killed, the Batman character goes so insane that he's going to start killing villains, and the heroes can't let that happen because it'll ruin their reputation.
Right, that's what.
And the villains don't want to get killed. And so,
mine was a higher log line description of the story, as opposed to digging into the details.
This is if these writers wanted to do an issue of Astro City is what this was.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's Astro City.
It did have Astro City. I also thought Astro City while reading this. A little bit of Astro City, a little bit of that Mark Waid Irredeemable.
She's the play box. And I was like, that's Jack in the Box. That's an Astro City character.
Or the Toy Man.
Although that's a hero.
Yeah, Toy Man.
Yeah, well, yeah, whatever. Patton Oz, Jordan Blum is like a horror movie person.
Is
he like a Blumhouse guy?
That's Jason Blum.
Oh. Are they? Whatever. You could see why I would be confused about that. I'm not sure who he is. I know who Patton Oswalt is. He seems to be a comic.
Jordan Blum is a comedy writer.
He wrote the MODOK show and was on Community.
They did that MODOK series.
Patton Oswalt was the voice of MODOK on that MODOK show.
I'll go.
Yep.
I thought it was fine. I thought it was well done. I thought the characterization, the dialogue, and the art, I thought it was all pretty good. It was solid stuff. Don't really care. I wouldn't search out this story because it's just a DC analog and it's telling a different story. But you know,
I liked the art a lot. We were mentioning, Josh, how like you can use colors to make it more obvious that a flashback is happening, and this book did that nicely. So I appreciated that, because it wasn't as confusing of where we were in the timeline because of the colors when we're back in time are a little bit more flattened and like sort of pop arty, you know, nostalgic almost for a earlier, simpler time in the world when the modern world is a little drabber and grungier. So, I really like the art. I agree. The story didn't fully grab me. I was, interested. It wasn't a slog to get through, but...
No, it wasn't bad. If I read this, I wouldn't be like, oh, I got to read this. You know, I'm not interested in it. Connor?
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I don't mind pastiches. Like, you know, Sex was terrific. Obviously, Astro City is terrific. Black Hammer is terrific. Like, you can do interesting stories by building off of what is familiar. And I thought I think Ryan is correct. The art was really good. The main character who is sort of Toy Man's daughter character, it was interesting. Her power was fun, that she takes like, raw materials and turns them into deadly toys. Like, I thought that was a fun power that I wish was a patron power. You know, it was okay. It was okay. It's a big, it had a big week, you know. On a big week like this, I very rarely check out new books. I didn't really look at it originally before with Patron Pick, and I don't know if I'd read more. I didn't dislike it enough to not read more, but I didn't love it enough to definitely be like, yes, I definitely want to know what happens next. But I do think the conceit's interesting, although not totally original. And I don't just mean the pastiche wise. I mean, like, the idea that there's a code, you know, this is very much a the kind of the boys kind of empowered, like there's a code amongst heroes and villains. You don't cross the line. And when that happens, like it's a major deal. And you know, it was fine.
And there's a villain bar. I feel like that's become kind of a trope as well, that there's always a bar where all the villains hang out.
But to me, at the end of the day, it's how do you execute on the tropes? And I thought the execution was fine.
Yeah, I agree. You
know? So yeah. So, I mean, it was fine. Like I didn't dislike reading it. I enjoyed reading it, but at the end of the day, I finished it. So yeah, that was fine. I didn't need more.
Right, but like, if the next issue comes out, are you like compelled to find out what happens next?
Not compelled, but if it came out and I had five books, I'd probably read it.
Right.
But it's unlikely.
Right. Yeah. So. I don't care what happens next. Like I thought it was good, but it just wasn't something I want more of.
Ratings at five.
Ratings.
3.5.
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
I like 3.5 for us.
Mm-hmm. So none of us are sticking with it.
I think I'm with you. Not. Like,
yeah.
I might, but I'm not. What is it? Is it Dark Horse? It's Dark Horse.
Dark Horse.
It is Dark Horse.
Yeah.
This would have been Image at some point in the past.
Yeah, and it doesn't say if it's going to be a limited series or not. I think if I knew it was only going to be like five issues or so, I might be more inclined to stick with it. But
you have to assume everything is a limited series at this point. That's just the way it goes. And they're not doing 45 issues of Minor Threats. It's going to be, you know. Then again, they've done like 100 issues of Black Hammer, so who knows?
Minor Threat is a loaded term.
I did think that.
To some of us. You know, it's a seminal punk band, and they were kids, and they're a minor threat. That was a wordplay.
DC band, right?
And yeah. Oh no, it's the East Coast hardcore. You know, Discord Records, they become Fugazi, blah blah blah, all that. And so, it is not unusual to have writers of comics who are in a similar demographic as me. You know, famously Remender, that's a thing he does. But I don't know that the title fits here, because I get it that minor is being used in a different way, actually the more traditional way, but it indicated to me that there was going to have something that made me think of that. But maybe they weren't thinking of the band at all. I don't know. But I guess they're minor because they're insignificant.
That, and also she was a kid and Robin was killed. So it's kind of like there's a lot of play here. The Minor Threats, I think at the end of the day, is about it's like if Kite Man and Condiment Man, and they all teamed up to take down the Joker. They're the minor threats in the Rogues Gallery. That's kind of what it is.
I don't think the title works. I also don't like the design of the title. It doesn't look right.
Yeah. So it was
sorry. All right. I know that's nothing, but like this is maybe my fault, but the title made me think it was going to be different than it ultimately was, and so I thought about it. Like, is this the right title for it? But who cares? That doesn't matter. Just the thought process.
Patreon.com/ifanboy. If you give it the $5 or higher level, well, everyone who gets the vote, every patron gets to vote no matter what you give. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show. Ryan, you're up.
I have a power that is about to be bestowed upon Peter Compton, and this power is that Peter has a rat that can jump on the heads of other people and control them, Remy the Rat style. But it can't control him unless he wants it, but he can use it to control other people.
Isn't that just Ratatouille?
I think that was different, but...
Did you think about this after you read Minor Threats?
Did you watch Ratatouille?
I did. I have seen Ratatouille. I did make the Patton Oswalt connection, but I was in the kitchen before the show was recording, and I just had the thought of like, wouldn't it be awesome if you could remote control other people using a rat friend? And so like, I just thought that would be a really cool power to have.
It's the hair pulling still freaks me out.
you just put the rat on somebody else and that person can do what you want. And, you know, I think some days I just need some help, guys. And this would be a way for me to get some help.
By enslaving people via rat? Jeez. That's your solution?
It's either that or hire an assistant, but who is that kind of cash?
I need some help. Hey, what are you doing today? Oh, nothing.
Come here, just
a second.
Yeah. Crouch down.
You met my pet? Why is it pulling my hair?
Listen, when you finish cooking the omelet, you can take a break and have a glass
of
water.
I'm not entirely sure, but I think that's a supervillain power.
Sometimes people take a villainous turn.
Oh boy. All right.
It's difficult to spin that power into anything good. Like being that character, like the Justice League, like, you can't be on this team. Yeah, but look what I can do. It's messed up, dude.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, rats don't live that long, so he's not going to have this power. Like, the lifespan's
a couple
of
only
years.
One specific rat.
Yeah, he's got one specific rat that he can deploy that sticks
with him.
I'm
pretty sure if you control people against their will for any amount of time,
he could get consent
it's
first.
It's not a good thing.
He could get consent.
Okay, fine. I'm not signing that. Wait, so the rat controls what I do and I got no say? Yeah. What do I get out of it? Just hold your head down.
So, back up. Is the rat, like, you want this person to, like, help you cook and clean and stuff. Does the rat know how to cook, or are you also directing the rat? Because in that case, you're still doing the
extra
work.
Good question.
Peter is able to, like, psychically tell the rat what he wants to have done, and the rat is able to take it from there. So he can just psychically project the idea of, like, man, we really need someone to sweep the house and mop up.
Okay.
And then the rat will control someone and help them do that.
So it's not like a matter of, like, you know when somebody offers to help, but you're like, it's going to take more effort for me to explain.
Exactly.
To
this is the shortcut for that. That is exactly it, Josh, because the person will do it the way Peter wants it done.
Uh-huh.
And it's just an
this
instant
is definitely
psychic
mind
thing.
Control.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rat has to physically get to the other person and climb up on their head and start controlling them.
I mean, this isn't even like a moral gray area. We're out of the gray. We're in the black.
I mean, we said the powers
Spider-Man
would be dumb.
Would punch you.
We said the powers would be dumb. We didn't say that they would be that they would always be appropriate.
No, we did not say that, and that's true.
We're not criticizing it.
There are plenty of people who have been given patron powers that we would prefer not to use those powers, especially around us. So that's part of the risk we take.
We're not criticizing you. We're just pointing it out. That's all.
Okay, that's fine.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's how you can get a patron power like Peter. Thanks for being a patron. Sorry, Peter.
Comes great. Rats.
Sorry. We haven't apologized to the patron in some time.
I think we can do this question quickly. We're not that far over. Okay. So Adam from Orlando, Florida wrote in a while ago. Sorry, Adam. Your email's been in our script for so long.
We've been thinking about it, even if you didn't think about it that long.
Adam says, I've thought about this for about 2 minutes, which is not even enough to think about. But who is the Kang out of iFanboy people? So I assume he means everybody who's ever been a host or a writer. It's got to be Paul, right?
If Jonathan Majors is any indication, which one of us has the best biceps?
He was a terrible Kang, and I hope they change his personality for the movies. It's got to be Paul, right?
Can we define Kang? Yeah. What are we?
The bombastic
pomposity. Paul's not exactly
But there has to be
but
something about
conqueror.
Kang that has That's to be true. Both conquering, self-defeating, and I would argue fashion icon.
But I feel like his personality is a major, major part of Kang. Like, Kang talks about himself in the third person. Kang is overconfident. Kang, will monologue at you.
Wait, overconfident? I'm out.
So
it's
who
not
is
me.
The Kang?
No, I don't know that. Does iFanboy have a Kang?
I want to clarify that none of this is bad, right? I think there's no one to one analog to Kang in the fanboy crew, but
it's wrong. It is. He's even Richards.
He's a Richards. That's a good point.
He's the most world conquering out of all of us.
That's very true.
He wants to defeat his enemies.
Is he self defeating? There's got to be an element of. I mean, again, I think that's maybe why this is a bad fit.
No. Does Kang ultimately reach his goals.
No.
Well, yes, he does.
Immortus does.
Immortus does. He gets where he needs to go. It's a part of the process.
No, Immortus is Nathaniel Richards. Kang is Kang.
That's what Kang would tell you.
Exactly.
But he's delusional.
He's too close
it's
to
Ron.
It. It's
Ron. Ron is Kang.
Yeah.
All right.
Not a one-to-one. He's not as pompous as Kang. He's not a fashion icon,
he's not evil. Well, let's come back on that pompous thing.
I think he's going to be pissed we said he wasn't a fashion icon.
He's not a fashion
icon. I think he knows.
He might have been in 1994.
Kang
is a time traveler.
That's kind of true. You look at Ron and you think he's time traveled from the early 90s.
Ooh.
All right. Ouch.
I'm coming around on this pick.
It is, and anybody who's come on this show in the last 5 years, like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm sorry, this is for long time listeners.
Yeah,
why don't you time travel back to the earlier episodes?
Adam, thanks for writing in. contact@fanboy.com. You can write in there if you want your email on the show. Also, if you want to get on the Media Explode, put Media Explode in the subject line. Someone wrote in a Media Explode question recently that was about Grant Morrison, and I was like, well, we're not doing this on the Media Explode. It's not a Media Explode question. So,
Grant Morrison makes media.
Right, but it's like, what do you think of Grant Morrison's early work? It's like, well, that's a comic question. So, Media Explode is a non-comics media show. I want to emphasize that, because we always get questions. When are you guys going to cover Sandman on the Media Explode? It's for non-comics media. Non-comics.
Okay, Top Gun Maverick.
So,
there's no Top comics Gun Maverick. It is a comic book movie.
Blackbird, or whatever, but non-comics media. The Poseidon Adventure.
Blackbird is the name of the X-Men jet.
That's just coincidence.
All right.
It's also
just everyone. Everyone know that we had a lot of technical problems with this episode, so everyone's punchy.
We have?
Yes.
The timing's a little off.
Timing of the thing.
SR-71.
Let's talk about other shows we've put out in the last couple of weeks. Animated Brain Trust show. Ryan and I and Paul Montgomery reviewed Green Lantern Beware My Power, which I saw a commercial for during a baseball game. I was like, what is happening right now?
That's weird.
So you can check that out. That was earlier in the month. What month is this? Is this still August? Yeah. Is it going to be August when the show comes out? Yes, it is. So earlier in August that happened. Media Explode, which was just talked about. We did the top 5 TV deaths. Josh and Ron and I talked about that. That was a lot of fun. We had a lot of time. We laughed. We cried. We had a good time talking about that. And just this past week, right behind the show on the feed, you can find Josh and I talking about Hulk Future Imperfect for the latest Booksplode. We had a lot of fun with that conversation.
Based on the last two Media Explodes, you could rebrand it as an Anthony Edwards Appreciation Podcast.
It's always Anthony Edwards.
In general, that's all iFanboy is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not on the site, but it's in the charter agreement.
Yeah. It's not what we're about.
You know, we used to make a joke about what we're about and our platform. Our platform is Anthony Edwards Appreciation. I don't think this anything.
So you can find those shows behind this one on the feed, and we will have a whole slew of new special edition shows coming out in September, which we'll talk about when September
never stops. I do a show called Science Sort Of, but I do want to point out that I have been remiss in pointing out that I was a guest on two other podcasts that I believe I was asked to be a guest on because of my affiliation with iFanboy, so it only makes sense to mention it here. There's a podcast called Men of Steel. It's a Superman podcast, and I went on episode 90 to discuss the It's Superman novel that Connor and I both read a while back and actually reread for the show. I hadn't reread it in a while. It holds up. It's a good, fun little novel.
It's a good novel, yeah.
Yeah, so we discussed that on their show, and then I went on Blake Chastain's podcast, Xvangelical. Blake is a longtime iFanboy listener, and he does a show about being an ex-member of the evangelical Christian community, in particular the American brand of evangelicalism, and you might not expect my interview on that show to discuss my iFanboy origins, but it did come up. So if you want to hear sort of the story of how I got involved with the
Blankets,
Blankets. I don't know if I discussed Blankets, but that is kind of relevant. But yeah, so I was on the episode. He doesn't number his episode, so it's just the Ryan Haupt episode of Xvangelical. Available wherever you get your podcast.
Do you run these appearances by the brand department?
Yeah, like we didn't hear about these things. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize. Was I supposed to get approved?
you have to get it approved in triplicate from three different departments.
Rogue. Yeah. I guess I missed that. I missed that Slack channel.
Jeez.
Also, we have a show coming out that the three of us guested on. It hasn't come out yet, so we don't want to plug it in case they have a problem. You never know with podcasts. So we'll probably plug it next week, but it was a lot of fun that the three of us were on recently. Or we recorded it actually a while ago, but it was a good time, and we'll plug it next week if it actually does come out.
There were points involved, and you can I want to see predictions in the Discord of the three of us, who got the most points, who got the second most points, and who got the not most points.
Anyway, that should be coming out this coming week, but we'll see. We'll let you know in the next show if it actually did come out, and we're excited to talk about it when it does.
You can find all the stuff that we have done at iFanboy over at iFanboy.com. That's our website. There's an archive of all the writing and that people have done over the years, and links to all the podcasts and video shows. All the things are there. That's where we put it. That's where it stays. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by following at iFanboy on Twitter, at iFanboyComics on Instagram. You can follow us individually at CSGO Patrick and Jay Flanagan on Instagram. And then Ryan is Haupt, H-A-U-P-T, on Twitter, and Ryan Haupt on Instagram. And finally, our YouTube page is at youtube.com/iFanboy. There are hundreds of video shows there that we used to do. And so the archive is available for your perusal. And you can see all the shorts that we wore on couches.
Also, those couches were not forgiving. Like,
nope.
We were all pretty thin back then, but it doesn't look like it because you sort of had to butt hunch up and everyone
you had
everyone
to sit,
hunching
you had
on
to
a couch.
Sit on the edge.
Yeah.
You had to sit on the wooden bit on the edge. I combined bit and edge. So I said bitch. That's what happened. You got to sit on that wooden bitch. No, bit on the edge.
Yeah.
And you had to, so you're, I remember, that's what people don't know is that when the camera stopped rolling, we went, oh, like we had to like, we let our spines relax.
Whereas now, like, now YouTube videos, you have to be inches from the camera sitting at a desk in like a gaming chair.
Yeah. Right. That's not going to happen.
You didn't know that back then.
Well, we were pioneers. We were making the rules.
Yeah.
We didn't even have a fucking high def camera.
I love the idea of like pioneers. You think like covered wagons out on the open range, three white guys on a couch.
That's basically what it was.
Huge hot lights. There was no LEDs then.
No, God, no, God. Those lights. Those lights started at least one fire. That's how hot they were. I burned one of the scrims burned. Started smoking because of the light.
Those lights are in my basement, and like I don't know what to do with them because I'm like, who would want these? It's like, who wants this old Packard jalopy?
Yeah. Like, you'll turn it on and you'll start to sweat immediately.
If somebody's doing set dressing for a YouTube show recorded in the early 2000s, like if they're doing a show about early YouTubers.
I guess, yeah, but that would be it.
We weren't YouTubers.
Yeah, we were on
Revision 3ers.
Revision 3ers. Hey, if you like the show,
hey,
I'm so hungry right now. My body, like my blood sugar has just dropped below the floor, and I'm starting to pass out. If you like the show,
you gotta pull up before 5,000 feet.
I'm not even
the hard deck is a recommendation.
The hard deck is absolute, Josh.
it's coming to streaming pretty soon. It'll watch all the time. If you like the show, write a review, leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Even better, that's word of mouth. Tell your friends. Help spread the iFanboy word. We thank you very much to all who do that. It helps the algorithm, and we'd appreciate it. And that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Ryan. My name is Connor.
I'm Ryan, requesting permission to buzz the tower.
Useless, useless.
I think it was Eustace he was trying to say. I don't know. I got to find out.